Podcast.
In November 2021, it was announced that Argyll and Bute was set to benefit from over £2 million of UK community renewal funding. The council submitted bids to the UK government on behalf of organisations and council services who are investing in skills, placemaking, community and supporting people into employment. The award of £2 million is one of the largest in Scotland and came from a total allocation of £18.4 million for Scotland. 8 out of 11 bids for Argyll and Bute were successful. Today I'm talking to Mary Louise Howard, Senior Development Officer from the Development and Economic Growth Team, who was instrumental in preparing the submission and will give us an overview of the funding process and the successful bids for Argyll and Bute. So, hi Mary Louise. Now, you were our guru on European funding. So, post-EU exit, there's a whole raft of new funding streams to get your head around. And the first one's been Community Renewal Fund. If somebody's not familiar with that, what's that fund all about? And what the main criteria, or were the main criteria for bidding into that?
Okay, well, the Community Renewal Fund was launched by the UK Government Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government in March 2021, so just under a year ago, as part of the UK Government's Leveling Up agenda. So the UK Government has pledged to replace European structural funding with a new fund called the Shared Prosperity Fund, and that's due to launch in spring this year. The Community Renewal Fund was launched as a pilot to the UK Shared Prosperity Fund, aiming to support communities for them to pilot programmes, new approaches, aligning national and local provision. It was a one-off fund and all projects are due to complete in June 2022. So for projects, that's a very, very short timescale. But by this point, the UK Shared Prosperity Fund is expected to have been announced and launched. So we're expecting an announcement on that in April. 100 areas were selected as priority places, and Argyll and Bute was one of these. And these were selected based on a number of indicators, which included productivity, household income, unemployment, skills and population density. The difference for priority places is that they were allocated some revenue funding to assist with the development of bids. But other areas could still bid into the process, but they didn't get the financial support. And the projects that bids had to meet at least one of the government priorities for this fund. And there was four areas: investment in skills, investment in local business, investment in communities and place, and supporting people into employment.
Is that your dog at the background, Mary Louise? It's fine. Mind joining the podcast. I'm not at home with them today, but mind joining the podcast, so don't worry about them. We love the added
colour. Let's make the guest appearance. So the council could bid for a package of funding up to a maximum of £3 million. But the UK government stipulated that we had to have a minimum project size of 500,000. Now, for an area like Argyll and Bute, we know the projects, we know the type of projects that can happen here. And we knew that was quite an ambitious figure. And in anticipation of the projects that could come forward and also the limited time to deliver, we had a number of calls and emails with our local sort of contact civil servant within the Department for Local Government, Housing and Communities. And over the course of a number of conversations, we explained the geography of Argyll and Bute, how our economies of scale work and how that might be different to what they had maybe anticipated for this fund. And we explored with them the possibility of enabling smaller size projects. And we subsequently agreed that we would launch the call for funding for projects with a minimum size of 100,000. And I think that's a very important part of the process. It's a brand new fund. It's new for the civil servants, new for us. And what was quite interesting is I felt as if they genuinely listened. So although the guidance itself didn't change, there was just that understanding that we could put in smaller projects, and that relationship building was a big, big part of that.
I think that's a good point, because the timescale between them asking for bids and producing them and when we would have to deliver and the kind of scale we can work at in a single project, given our geography, is quite different from some of the areas they'll work with. And
And it's interesting since that, we've had a change of the name of the department to Levelling Up Housing and Communities to keep up with that. But they've got they've built their team to work on that liaison with us and to have that relationship, which is really helpful to have those links. Because I know you and your team, a big part of that is, it's very technical more so than perhaps people might realise, but it's also having those relationships and being to deal with queries and that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And they were very receptive to that. And I think that was quite enlightening for us as well, because sometimes with funding, they set the criteria and that's it. And hopefully with any of the future funds coming forward, that we can start sort of going over that ground again. And, it's all about context. And the government they have got ends of priorities within that. But if we can't work with them, they won't achieve their priorities. So I think that relationship building is really important.
So tell us what was involved in the process and how we got to decide on the projects that ultimately we bid for.
It was quite an inclusive process, but also very time bound. So what I mean by inclusive is the council, they were the lead authority. So that meant the council had responsibility for collating the bid. But we also involved lots of stakeholders and partners in the process. It was a double-layered competitive process, which started off with a local call for projects, and then that was followed by a national submission to what was essentially a national competition. So our invitation to bids was launched in April last year, and the applicants were only given about 5 weeks to submit an application. So it was a nervous time for everybody. We obviously wanted projects. We had set an officer aside specifically to work with developing projects, because we couldn't expect the projects to get familiar with all the requirements of this fund in such a short space of time. But the potential applicants, they really did step up to the mark. We had really good engagement, and we had a total of 17 submissions. So that was quite a high number.
Absolutely.
That burden of work then sort of sat with the officers. So we had to obviously go through them, technically check them, make sure that they were eligible within this fund. Most of the bids were local, but we did have a few national bids for project delivery, and that was something that the fund did allow. So you could have a national deliverer spanning multiple local authorities. Interestingly, the council, as well as running this process, could also be a bidder, but we put in place a very, very strict separation of duties protocol, and that ensured that the bidders within the council were no way involved in the bid coordination at all. There was a very, very strict separation there. So as well as coordinating the bids, we had to set up an assessment panel to assess and score the bids. We had a sort of rough template that we could use, and we more or less adopted that was given to us by the government, but we didn't have to use that. The guidance was quite strict about how the projects could be selected, so we had to go through that process. And what we've done is we set up a stakeholder group that involved mostly external partners, as well as internal economic development colleagues who were not directly involved in submitting a bid. And the partners were selected based on their local knowledge of Argyll and Bute, its economy, how its economy works, its needs, its potential, other stakeholders. And the assessment panel had the onerous task of reading all the applications, and then they scored them all on an individual basis without speaking to one another. And then we had a consolidation meeting where we discussed all the projects and all the scores, and this enabled projects to be ranked. The ranking wasn't actually part of what the government had suggested, but we found that that was the only way that we could objectively look at all the projects. We had bids that exceeded the upper limit of £3 million, so there had to really be a measurable way of selecting projects and a transparent way. And the final list of projects was it had political approval, and after that we then compiled the application. So we had to sort of summarise all these projects, put them in a composite bid, and then we submitted that to the government to meet the deadline, which I think was the 18th of June at midday. But there was a lot of people involved in this process, and I have to say the team that worked on it worked very well together, and yeah, we submitted it.
They were really detailed bids and things, and I mean, it's fantastic that we had more than our limit to choose from, because I know at one point we were a little bit worried whether we'd have enough in such a short time scale. So no, I mean, it's always easy in hindsight to looking back at these things, but I know it was quite fraught at the time, and a lot of hard work went in from all of that panel to do that. So it was a big task. So we had a number of successful projects. Give us a brief description of the ones that were successful in the end.
Okay, well, I think we had a very fascinating suite of projects, very innovative. And they ranged from the establishment of a seaweed academy at SAMS, which I think everyone is familiar with SAMS, just outside of Oban, ranging from that to a study looking at hydrogen production and distribution in Machrihanish. We had a council project looking at unmanned aerial vehicles, so taking some of the work there to a stage where it can be ready to get funded. We've also got projects taking place in Tarbert as part of their regeneration. We've got one in Dunoon, which takes forward the community's vision of developing a world-class tourism offering. The council's education department also received funding to develop STEM, science, technology, engineering and maths-based learning material. And the University of the Highlands and Islands have also been funded to develop an employer-based education and training curriculum, specifically that can be delivered in remote and rural areas and focused on economic regeneration. And finally, Highlands and Islands Enterprise have been funded to explore how carbon sequestration can be developed within our Island Butte as part of their community wealth building agenda. And for anyone who doesn't know what carbon sequestration is, and I didn't, I have to look that up, it's the process of capturing and storing carbon dioxide. So how you're looking at a way of it and how our rural communities can actually benefit from this process. Absolutely fascinating. And some of these projects have been picked up in the national media. I think particularly the Seaweed Academy, and that's very often quoted when the government talk about this fund. Quite often that's one of the projects that they talk about, and we've had Sky News running an article on that as well. So it's definitely captured the imagination of sort of stakeholders beyond Argyll and Butte.
So a real range in there. I mean, SAMS, that if people don't know, and hopefully they do because it's sort of globally renowned, but the Scottish Association for Marine Science. I mean, you've got them in there as a research facility for the higher education. We've got MacBase and the community company in there. Our project up at the airport with the drones, the unmanned vehicles. It's, you know, the STEM and the education based, it's tourism. I mean, it's such a range, and for such a rich selection to come forward in a short space of time and to all get funded. And I think we proportionally did pretty well out of the funding, didn't we, in terms of the final amounts that we levered in for our Argyll and Butte.
Yeah, I think we were the second highest amount for a local authority in Scotland. I think South Lanarkshire had more than us, but we had the most projects. So we had eight smaller projects. I think South Lanarkshire had then larger projects. So yeah, I think it just shows how much is going on here and how many projects just need that boost to get them out there. These projects, they didn't just appear when this funding appeared. People were working on them for a long time. And very often people are waiting for funding to take these things to the next stage. So that's all bubbling underneath the surface, and it's just waiting for something like an announcement like this to get them to their next stage. And for a lot of them, there will be a next stage. You know, some of them, this will be it, but a lot of them, it's about feasibility studies. It's about getting things to design stage and then using that as a springboard for hopefully when more funding comes along.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. So many of them sort of end up being funded by multiple different funding streams and pots of funding. But there's also, I think I might say, there was some additional funding for the council as well that came out of that at the end of the day.
Yeah, and that was something that was very welcome, because anyone who's familiar with external funding at the moment will probably realise that a lot of it comes for the project delivery, but not a lot for the stuff that happens sort of in the backroom function, so to speak. With this funding, as a priority area, we had £20,000 that we could use to help get the bid off the ground. But as part of the bid, we were able to include a 2% management cost against each project. So that gives us funding to enable the claims to be paid. We've got monitoring to do. We've got reporting to do. So that has been really welcome. And it's meant that we could run the fund with the security that we know that we've got somebody who's specifically looking after compliance. It's very tightly managed. And hopefully that will ensure the success of the fund and of the projects. So we're, for example, keeping an eye on the delivery timescales, and just if the projects look as if they've got any trouble, we'll intervene and see what we can do to help. And we're also still liaising with the UK government. So for example, some projects have asked for an extension, which isn't unreasonable given we had a number of delays to get to this stage. So that's something that we're discussing with them, and we'll be putting something in writing soon to the UK government. So there's an ongoing process, and yeah, that does require to be funded.
Yeah, I think if you're not close to it, people perhaps don't realise the amount of work that goes with bidding, reporting, overseeing the projects, and we're seeing multiple funds come through that. You know, that there's quite a lot of work going on at the moment associated with all those funds. So it's definitely welcome that it helps us to resource that for sure. So we want to be able to go for the maximum number of funds that we can and have the capacity to do that. So what happens next with those projects? What happens now?
Well, they're now under implementation phase, so that will see them through to the end of June. They will also, they've got a requirement to evaluate their projects, but we have, again, this was a part of the discussions we had with the UK government, that feasibility studies or options appraisals are not really something that really merit an evaluation. So there's an agreement that they are by default almost, you know, part of a process. But the ones that require to be evaluated, they'll be sort of undertaking that work fairly soon. And that should inform the Shared Prosperity Fund. So these are a pilot for that. And we'll obviously see what happens. We're interested in those evaluations as well. I think for a lot of projects, they're already looking towards their next stage of funding. So we've got the Rural Growth Deal funding. And some of these projects are very closely related to that. So the UAV, the drone project, for example, the next stage of that will hopefully be taken forward with the Rural Growth Deal. We've also got, for example, SAMS, the Seaweed Academy. That should closely align with some of the Growth Deal work that's going on to look for promoting the commercialisation of seaweed, which is a resource that our Guyonview has. It's apparently a really good quality. So again, these are also sort of dovetailing into hopefully bigger and better projects, and also the STEM curriculum, which has been developed through the Community Renewal Fund, that will get delivered. And there's a STEM hub, for example, in Dunoon, and that will be used to deliver that. And I think there's also work going on in the Rural Growth Deal there as well. And then we've got the other Levelling Up Fund, the big one. And again, some of the work aligns very much with what's happening there. We've got sort of place-based stuff happening in Dunoon, which should tie in quite well with the tourism-based project. Again, looking at the work that's going on in SAMS and the Dunbeg Corridor, so all that infrastructure work and what's happening in SAMS, there's so much. I think in Argyllan Butte, no project takes place in isolation. And I think whenever we look at a project, I think we're always looking at the horizon, and we're always speaking to our colleagues, and we're just seeing where we can get those synergies. And this is such a unique opportunity to see these projects, to build up a working relationship and then see where they can go next and where we can help them. Sometimes it's not funding. Sometimes it's also knowing what the projects are and knowing other stakeholders and just bringing them together. So it's quite nice to have that bird's eye overview at the moment. And just it's all about synergy and working together and maximising what we can get from those funds that are on the horizon. And this is a unique time for funding as well. There is so much coming from the UK government and we just didn't have those streams of funding. We did have European funding before, but the focus is different. And I think the job now is to refocus how we look at things and just to make sure that we're well positioned to go for any new funding that's announced.
Sometimes it's about trying to match one set of funding against another set of funding and things like that, isn't it? So that when match is needed and things, you can sort of make it all work together. And I know there's loads of work going into the levelling up bids, which we're not exactly sure whether it'll be sort of spring, summer when they're due in, but it's a massive piece of work that the team are involved in that. And as you said, the shared prosperity funds coming, I don't think we know how much we're going to get. What do we know about shared prosperity funds?
At the moment, I would say very little, but we are getting bits and pieces of information. So we know that we have to have an investment plan. And as you mentioned, we don't know when that has to be ready and we don't know how much funding that investment plan will be built around. So I think at the moment everyone's listening out for what's coming next. We do expect that there's going to be announcements in spring. And the government have acknowledged that we really need to know the amounts before we can start investment planning. But there's also, they've talked very much about partnership delivery. So that's something else that I think we should start scoping quite early on and seeing the partners that are going to be, could be involved with for this fund. So, yeah, there's quite a lot to get done without actually knowing what we're working within. But I think there's an acknowledgement throughout, I think, everyone working on this that we have to be doing something just now in anticipation of what's coming.
Yeah, I mean, and lots of opportunities and lots of projects, hopefully, that will benefit from all that funding. So, I know you and the team will be doing your very best to secure the maximum we can for Argyll and Bute of whatever's on offer. And I think the Community Renewal Fund has been an example of the sort of great success that you managed to lever in for what, although we're big geographically, we're a relatively small council in population terms. So it's a real coup for us in what you've been able to achieve. So. Thank you to you and all the partners and colleagues who've been involved in getting the bids together and assessing them and getting them submitted. And we look forward to what comes next with the Shared Prosperity Fund. So thank you.
Thank you.
So a big thank you to Mary Louise for joining me today and a shout out to Heidi, her dog, for making a special guest appearance there. Also, apologies, I had a couple of sound issues, so there was a couple of little bits of feedback there. Hopefully that doesn't interrupt your enjoyment of the podcast today. And keep a lookout for a future podcast where we'll take the opportunity to speak directly with some of the people who are delivering the projects mentioned, receiving community renewal funding. Bye for now.
This podcast.